chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Dr. Jason Selk on the show today. Dr. Selk is the best-selling author of several books, including his new one, Relentless Solution Focus. He is one of the nation's premier performance coaches, having worked with business titans, musicians, actors, and superstar athletes. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. So, Jason, I have been looking forward to this interview for weeks now. I've told you I am absolutely loving all your material. I was thinking about this and I was thinking, you know, I am so blessed with an amazing life, but could it be better? Could it be improved if I learn techniques and put more things in my tool belt? If I do some reframing of my mind, it absolutely can improve. And that is what I'm really hoping today that you and I are going to be able to do for our listeners, is just to get them thinking a little bit differently, giving them some real tools that they can use to improve their life. So I am excited about this, giving a lot of the good stuff away today to our listeners to help them. So I want to give a shout out to our mutual friend, Diane Miller, because Diane is the one that had connected us. So I just want to thank you, Diane, for that. So let's get started. So tell me a little bit about your background and what were the foundation that was laid to get you doing what you're doing today?
Well, Lisa, let me first say I'm very excited as well. And a big shout out to Diane. She's a mutual friend. She's actually a really, really close friend with my wife, and I know how terrific she is. So there's really a couple of things. I grew up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. It's a very blue-collar town. And the two things I think I took from where I'm from is, number one, the importance of work ethic. Both my parents were professionals, not to mention the people I grew up with. They just really understood, I think, at an extremely deep level, the importance of getting up early, being on time, getting after it all day, and then, you know, being proud of putting a full day of work in. You know, I saw both my parents model that day after day after day. And obviously with friends, parents, and just really the community that I grew up in, work ethic was such a big piece of it. The other thing, and this is more just from my house, both my parents are helping professionals. My mother was a bigwig in the Alzheimer's Association. She's a therapist by training. And my dad later went on to start his own financial services firm, but he was also a therapist, a counselor by training. He was a director of a youth shelter where he spent, you know, the majority of his time, and then had this side business where he made the majority of his money. But what I learned, you know, I was the house where on Thanksgiving, instead of getting up and, you know, rolling around at 10, 11 a.m. and waiting for football and eating turkey. And so we were up before the sun. And we were delivering meals on wheels to the elderly. And so I learned to work hard and to help other people. And I think for me, it was a really kind of a perfect fit for me to fall into the profession I've fallen into, because it's exactly what I'm most passionate about. It's what I care about the most is, you know, I take great pride in caring about the work and doing a high quality of work and having a great work ethic. And it's extremely rewarding to me that the work that I do may actually have a positive impact in terms of helping other people.
And you know what? Rest assured, I know you're helping people. But where I want to start here, you've done all kinds of things in your career, but you did work for the Cardinals from 2006. I think you worked there for 6 years, and you were the director of mental training for the Cardinals and a performance coach. I love what you said. You were told that if the players that were assigned to you did not perform better, that you would be fired immediately. So you knew exactly what your marching orders were every day. Wasn't easy, but you know, in 2006, they won the World Series. And then again in 2011, you know, while you were there. So tell me a little bit about what that taught you, and then we're going to get into a lot of other things.
Well, it really ran parallel with work ethic and the fact that I care about my work. That was a really good thing. But yeah, you're right. In fact, my first day on the job, John Mozeliak, who's still with the St. Louis Cardinals, he made it very clear to me that if I didn't perform, and they were running statistics on my performance, you know, they said, okay, he's this good before working with Selk. And if they weren't showing a significant measurable improvement across the board with the players, he made it very clear I'd be fired in no time. In fact, I was with the team for 6 years. And I never had a contract that they signed. I signed my contract every year, but they never signed the contract. So what it taught me was at that level, the expectations are a little bit higher and more serious. And honestly, I'd tell you, this day and age, I think our expectations of performance, the normal expectations of performance, are almost embarrassingly low. I hope that I've taught this to my children, that there is a significant level of incompetence that really goes on. And I heard this phrase a long time ago. I really liked it. So when the good people do nothing, the bad people win.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that people who are incompetent are bad people, but incompetent behavior, which we've all done. I look, certainly not saying I haven't been incompetent at certain points and still probably have some weaknesses here and there, but I don't give myself permission to be incompetent. Incompetent behavior should be unacceptable. It's unacceptable from me. If I'm incompetent, if I'm late to a meeting, I'm not going to make an excuse. I'm going to tell you, look, there's no excuse for it. I'm going to do better next time. And if not, you should fire me. And me knowing that I'm going to get fired if I don't behave at an extremely high level, that's very motivating. It causes me to get better. Instead of when we give permission to people, professionally speaking, to perform below expectation or below what your best is, it really is enabling. And I think as a country, we really should take notice and say, hey, look, we can do better. I don't think the previous 2 years have done anything but make this expectation level go down even further. I'm a big believer. Start with yourself. Hold yourself extremely accountable. When you screw up, what you will, don't make excuses. Just improve. Use the negative emotion of screwing up to perform better next time. And, you know, again, you say, what did I learn from the Cardinals? That was a really big thing. And that's why you see the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, they're the second winningest Major League Baseball team in the history of Major League Baseball. They're extremely successful. And one of the reasons is they hold people accountable to having a high expectation of performance.
Well, you know what? That's a perfect segue. I love executive toughness. And your Ford in there is by your friend, Andy Hill.
That's right.
He's a friend. He was a basketball player under Coach Wooden. I love Coach Wooden. He talks about it. And he said, you know, Wooden said, we cannot control the outcome, but we can control the process. And the process is so important. The preparation, the execution, the teamwork, the effort that goes in. But, you know, for you, you said you've really tried to narrow it down, and you've tried to help people achieve success in the most simple manner. And you've got a process. We'll get into that, but you talk about Occam's razor. You know, what's Occam's razor for our listeners that don't know?
So most people look at success, improvement as what else can I add so that I can improve, I can be better. Occam's razor is really the inverse of that. It's the purity or the perfection of Occam's razor would be when there's nothing left to delete that causes you to rise to your highest level of performance. And you're right, a lot of what I've learned, the biggest influence in my career other than my parents and where I grew up would be Coach John Wooden. And you talk about Andy Hill. Andy was kind enough to write the foreword for Executive Toughness. People who don't recognize Andy's name, Andy played for Coach Wooden, won multiple national championships with Coach Wooden, and then went on to become president of CBS. Now, in his tenure at CBS, he was the most successful president that they've ever had. So John Wooden taught Andy Hill, just like he taught me, that the number one tenet of controlling the scoreboard is to control process. Another really good friend of mine, in fact, I've written a couple of books with him now at this point, is Tom Bartow. Tom and Andy Hill are really close friends, and Tom and Coach Wooden were also really, really close friends. It was Tom, his uncle actually took over for Coach Wooden at UCLA. Tom told me a story one time. I said, well, you know, how important was process really to Coach Wooden? I didn't meet him until much later in life, but I had studied his work so much. And Tom literally was best friends with him up until the day Coach Wooden passed away. But Tom said, well, he told me this story one time. I was talking to Coach Wooden and I said, Coach, if we're sitting on the bench during a game, I want to know if I can kind of crawl in your head and figure out what you're really focused on. What are you focused on? And Coach Wooden looked at Tom. He said, Tom, I'm watching to see if my guys are making their cuts in straight lines or if they're making their cuts in banana patterns. And Coach Wooden had a really good sense of humor, which I don't know if a lot of people knew that or not, but he had kind of this dry, witty sense of humor where he's kind of messing with Tom a little bit, not giving him all the information, and just kind of seeing, you know, how Tom would respond. And Tom said, Coach, hold on a second. So you're telling me greatest coach of any sport of all time, during a game, you're not looking at the scoreboard. You don't really care about what the score is or if the team's winning or losing. You're watching to see if your guys are making their cuts in straight lines. And Coach Wooden looked at Tom and said, Tom, let's be clear. Winning is important. And the best way for me to ensure that that scoreboard and that the winning happens is to make sure that my guys are running their cuts in straight lines. That's the process. And if my guys are running their cuts in straight lines, they're going to be a little bit faster than the other guys out there. And if my guys are a little bit faster at everything we do, that score is going to take care of itself. And it really is a great metaphor, a great analogy, if you will, for us in real life. And again, Coach Wooden didn't necessarily know the science of it. In fact, the science hadn't been confirmed until he really kind of brought it to light. And then since, you know, I have all these researchers, performance psychologists and sports psychologists researching, is process an effective method of controlling success and outcome? And what you'll find is the research is pretty strong. It's the number one method of controlling results that we know of. Yes, identify what you want for the result. And unfortunately, in the corporate world, they're just light years behind the sports world. You don't hear many great sports programs or athletes or coaches talk about winning without then hearing them talk about the process behind it. But in corporate America, it's still all about win, win, win. Bottom line, bottom line, bottom line. They're still focused on the scoreboard. And that's fine, but it's not the most effective way to control the scoreboard. Remember this. So we'll get into a little science here so that people understand. The human mind can only fully focus on one thing at a time. And I know there might be people out there that say, well, yeah, this guy doesn't know anything about multitasking. Trust me, I do. I've actually done the homework, and I know maybe 6 or 8 years ago they were teaching multitasking. Well, they're not teaching it anymore for a reason, because it's not smart. You cannot make an intelligent argument that multitasking improves performance. It doesn't. The research is very solid and very clear. Multitasking is a bad thing. So if I'm focused on the result or the scoreboard, I can't be focused on the process or what causes the score to take care of itself or the winning or the result. So for example, in the corporate world, okay, I want to do whatever, $100,000 worth of sales. You can get yourself caught up in, okay, what's my daily number? How much am I making today? How much did I make on that call? You can do that, but it's all result thing. Instead, what's your straight line cut? What's the number one activity that will cause the 100,000 to become the reality over the course of a year? Now, if you're in sales, most people would say, okay, well, I got to make my 3 proactive sales calls to the right type of person. And then what I would challenge you, and this is what Coach Wooden said, is really put your energy into forcing your mind, your focus, your activity. Put your energy into getting that one most important activity done daily. And if you do that, You won't have to worry about the scoreboard. It will take care of itself. That's what Coach Wooden knew so long ago about process. And now, like I said, sport and performance psychology have researched it, and it's the number one tenet for controlling a person's success. What do you want result-wise? But more important, what's the number one activity you can do daily that will cause you to get there? And then put your energy into that process, and great things you'll see will happen.
So you, in your book, Executive Toughness, and we've already kind of touched on this a little bit, but there are three things that you talk about a lot. And you talk about accountability, then you talk about focus. We've already talked about that a little bit. And then the last thing you really talk about is optimism. You know, and I want to touch on just a couple of these. So being accountable, you say the simplest definition is doing what needs to be done. And you said, we have to take personal responsibility. Do not make excuses. People do not feel good when you try to justify when you screw up. Take personal responsibility. And you've got a little exercise here. You know, for 24 hours, what should you do?
So, you know, and go back to Occam's razor. You know, I think it's really easy for people to say, okay, well, go back to the example of, you know, I want to do 100,000 in sales. And what most people do is they'll come up with a very extensive to-do list. You know, they start the day every day with 8, 10, 12, 14 things to do. Listen, the most successful people, they never get everything done in any one given day. Never. I'm just going to tell you, it doesn't happen. But what they're really good at is they're getting the most important things done each and every day. So Occam's razor isn't what's everything you can do to be successful, because we know if you're going to try to do everything, you will compromise your ability to do the most important. So Occam's razor would be, don't worry about everything. How about just figure out what's your one most important thing? So I don't worry about what are you going to do in 24 hours. I would reframe the question this way. What's the one most important thing you need to get done in the next 24 hours? And if you get that one thing done, you're cutting in straight lines. You win if you do that. Remember, it's not how much can you do in any one given day? It's how many days can you do what's most important?
Right.
I'm just telling you, this idea, people shake their head at and they say, yeah, this is where you got to be accountable to this one thing. I'm telling you, I've studied success for 20 years now. I've been really, really fortunate that I get to work with the best of the best. And this is it. The best of the best are not smarter, faster, stronger than everybody else. They're just better at focusing on the most important thing. And Occam's razor would be, don't worry about four things, five things. And I know I talk about three things. Occam's razor, the purity of it would be, what's the one most important thing? But just kind of think, all right, what's one result goal you're trying to achieve? All right, now, once you have that, now I want you to think, okay, so what's the one most important activity you could do daily? What's that one process goal that would best position that result goal to happen? I'd rather you pick something, choose wisely, that you can commit to. Okay, now here's the question. With that one activity you put down, look at the last month. What percentage of the time are you getting realistically, literally, in the last month, that one thing done? All right, next question. What would your results look like in a month if you did that one thing 90%? I talk about this, you know, in the sports world, you pretty much have to be 100%, especially at the collegiate, Olympic, and professional level. Those guys, they can do everything right and still get their brains beat in, okay? But in the business world, you go 90% of your most important activity, you're going to win the World Series. You'll win the World Series every year. You can go 90% for a year. I'll give you a really vote of confidence. You're going to love the results, okay? So where would your results be in a month if you literally went 90% on that one most important activity? And then now think, in 6 months, you weren't great at everything else, but you nailed this 90% of the time. And now for a year, you just, this one activity,
right?
Where would your results be? You know, I ask this to, when people are thinking about hiring me to come in and coach for them or come do a keynote speech, these are typically the questions I ask right here. And say, okay, now how much would that be worth to your organization? If the people in your organization would 90% of the time get the one most important activity done, how much would that be worth to the organization? And there's usually laughter. You know, I'm working with a lot of these Fortune 500s and Fortune 100s. You're talking hundreds of millions of dollars just from going from, let's say, 60, 70% completion up to 90% on the one most important activity. And each person, it's a huge number. It's a huge difference. But this is the Occam's razor. See, so many people are focused on doing all this stuff right that they're going to be nowhere near 90% on their one most important activity. And I'll tell you what, this one thing is what I've put my greatest energy in. I learned this a long time ago, and for some reason it stuck. I said, you know what? I'm not going to be great at everything, but my most important activity, I'm going to get that done every day.
What is your one thing?
My one thing is 100% intensity, 100% of the time. And all that means specifically is I do somewhere between 4 and 5 hours of coaching calls daily. Now, you know, I got to generate business and emails and return phone calls just like anybody else. And I'm not great at that other stuff. You know, my wife would be the first to tell you, I complain all the time. But the one thing, when I'm on a coaching call with you or when you've hired me to do a speech, you've got my full attention.
You're 100% in.
And 100% of the time that I'm not looking at my phone, I'm not checking emails, I'm not thinking about other stuff. I am 100% focused. I visualize being focused during your coaching call. I visualize being focused during that speech. 100% intensity, 100% of the time is my one thing. And, you know, I've nailed that for a good amount of time.
Well, Dr. Selk, this has been so good, but we do have to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Dr. Jason Selk.
Let's face it, the future is mobile. There's a good chance that you are listening to this show right now on your phone. Have you explored how you can move your business mobile too? Our mobile apps team at Technology Partners makes it their mission to move our clients into the hands of their employees and customers and change their business processes to meet the demands of their users. Let's work together and build a dynamic mobile app for your team. Go to tpi.co/mobile apps and get the conversation started about how we can help you get your new application off the ground.
So welcome back to the Something Extra podcast with Dr. Jason Selk. So Jason, we have talked about so much here. We've talked about accountability, focus, optimism. Here's the cool thing about this though. They can all be learned. We can move the needle on all of these things, but let's camp out a minute on optimism because I think I read somewhere where you said confidence is kind of that trait that's kind of the difference maker, you know, and the optimism. Research shows that optimistic people are happier, healthier, they're more successful than their pessimistic counterparts. So if that's really true, we need to camp out here and we need to figure out how we can be more optimistic.
Yeah, so here's my favorite statistic on optimism. Yes, optimistic people are significantly, measurably happier, healthier, more successful. You see, people with RSF, and I'll tell you, optimism and RSF are the same thing. People with the RSF mindset or people who are optimistic live up to 14 years longer than normal people. How could the thoughts in your head cause a person biologically to live 14 years longer? It's totally normal to be pessimistic. It comes back to something called PCT, problem-centric thinking. And PCT is the biological hardwiring of the brain to focus on the problem. I'll give you an example. You do 100 things right, one thing less than perfect. When you're driving home thinking about your day, it's totally normal to focus in on that imperfection. I want you to understand biologically what goes on when you allow the thought to focus on the imperfection and to overlook the good. When you focus on that negative, the problem, your brain releases a neurotransmitter called cortisol into the bloodstream. Cortisol, you know, hundreds of years ago, is really, really effective at helping people stay alive. You know, back when we needed to worry about getting pulled into the lion's den, it was really, really effective. Unfortunately, you know, fast forward, we live in the safest time by far to be a human being, but we still have this biological tendency, this PCT built-in. And so what once used to be really helpful for survival is now extremely counterproductive for happiness, health, and success because that cortisol, it moves you into fight or flight. Now, it actually does a couple of things. It causes you to feel like garbage. Like literally, a human being cannot experience a negative emotion. I call them the nasty six: stress, anxiety, fear, anger, depression, and guilt. You can't experience a negative emotion unless the PCT trigger has kicked the cortisol into the bloodstream. It's 100% of the time that you experience negative emotion because of PCT, 100% of the time. So when the cortisol goes into the bloodstream, it disables the brain. I move into fight or flight. I lose my ability for detailed thinking. And it also causes the negative emotion. Now, the negative emotion, not only does it feel bad, but that cortisol is like self-induced poison. Those are toxins. Again, at very small doses, it keeps you alive, but it doesn't take much to override the small dose and now start to be very counterproductive. So that's kind of pessimism or why so many people, I mean, watch the news. All you hear about is the horrible stuff in the world. Andy Hill told me this. He was the president of CBS. He said that they had a phrase in the news: if it bleeds, it leads. Because everybody has this PCT, and so we relate to it. Now, the highly successful have learned, I can retrain my brain. Most people think you're hardwired for PCT. There's nothing you can do. That's crazy. Just like every human being is hardwired that at birth, my bicep is going to be weak. You don't have any babies that are ever born with super strong biceps. It's not possible. With training, though, every baby, every human being, for the most part, can get a strong bicep. Same is true for the brain. You can train your brain to be the opposite of PCT, which is RSF or optimistic. Optimistic is learning to realize there's always a solution, always. So even if you're going to focus on the negative, you can replace the negative thinking immediately. And I write about this in RSF, and there's a training mechanism, and I talk about it in chapter 7 of the book. But 3 minutes a day, 3 times a week. So a 9-minute investment, you actually retrain, you rewire the brain so that PCT becomes abnormal and RSF becomes completely normal. You know, I have as many problems as everybody else. I just don't get caught up in them. If you're a person that loves drama, you will hate,
you're gonna hate
my book, Relentless Solution. I mean, you'll hate this concept. You'll hate everything about it. But if you're a person that really wants to learn biologically, how do you become happier, healthier, more successful? And I try to write it as simple as possible. Pick up a copy of RSF. I talk about the training in chapter 7, but it's 3 minutes a day. You literally rewire the brain so that instead of being normal to focus on the problem, it becomes completely normal that when you do experience problems very quickly, and that the rule of thumb is 60 seconds. If you can do it within 60 seconds, you stay out in front of that cortisol. But if you can train the brain to focus on the solutions, your confidence will rise. Your health will rise. Like you said, you could cut the major diseases in half or down by a third just from changing the way we think. So many cases of stress and anxiety and depression, all those antidepressants and anti-anxieties, the statistics are 8% of the population really biologically needs those meds, but we're closer to 30% taking the meds. Think about that 22%. And you think, well, this sounds too good to be true. Why aren't people talking more about this? I'll tell you why. Think about how much money is being made in that over-medicated 22%. I don't want to get on the soapbox here, but there's great motive for people not to learn this. But don't be one of the people that is motivated for the wrong reasons. Pick up a copy of RSF and teach yourself how to think the right way. You'll thank yourself for doing it. And it's the best book I've written. It's the most important work I've ever done. It may be, hopefully, the biggest thing that I'm remembered for. The reviews have been outstanding. I'm teaching my children this stuff. And my son just went to Florida State, and he said to me the other day, he said, Dad, I have no idea the advantage you were giving me. Thank you. You know, from an 18, 19-year-old boy to say that unprompted, this is real stuff, and it really does work.
Here's the key word in your book, Dr. Selk, is relentless. Relentless solution thinking. So be relentless to start thinking about that solution instead of the problem that's in front of you. You talk about dominant thought and you give an example. We focus on what you tell us not to focus on. So you give this example of the pink elephant with the blue running shoes. And you said, okay, now try not to think of that blue elephant. Well, there is something that you call replacement thinking. And so if you've got that dominant thought that's negative, replace it with something that is positive. Maybe it's a person, you know, just really grinds on you. We'll replace that person's face with, you know, a face that you love, like your grandchild or something like that. So you can retrain your brain. And it's going to take some work. It's not easy. It's going to take some consistency and some discipline on our part, but we can do this. This is so exciting to me. But I have to ask you, Dr. Selk, this is something extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Well, I think it's, you know, this idea of replacement thinking that you talk about. And again, the exercise of the pink elephant with the blue running shoes is really kind of a primitive or very elementary way of getting people to realize they can control their thoughts. This is not about when life is rough, just think all the good things. That's not what this is.
Right.
Now, it's good that you could do that, but this is a lot more than that in that it's when life is tough, I don't care about all the good things in your life. I know you don't either at that point. What you need to think in that moment is, number one, there's always a solution, always. Maybe not perfection, but always improvement. It's my favorite quote from the book. And You got to know that, that there's always something that you can do to make your situation a little bit better. Once you kind of get that perspective of, okay, I can do something, no matter how bad life is right now, I can do something to make it even just an inch better. And then you just ask the question, what's one thing I can do right now that could make this better? And if you put the energy into figuring out what is that one inch of improvement, again, it's not just pretend like everything's great when it's not. That stopped working for me a long time ago. Right. It's all about life is hard. Everybody has tough stuff in life. Be ready for it. Know that it's going to happen. Don't feel sorry for yourself when it does. Be ready for it. And when it does, attack it. And you attack it by just being relentless, asking the question, what's the one thing I can do right now that could make this better? Whether you're a leader, whether you're trying to be a leader, whether you have no intention of being a leader, you form the habit of asking that question in the face of adversity or problems, you will love the results. Life becomes immediately better when you live on the solution side, as opposed to living in that PCT world that most normal people live in.
Very good. Well, Dr. Selk, you know, if people wanted to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
I'd tell you, look, don't worry about getting in touch with me. The best work I've ever done is this book. You see it over my shoulder. Lisa, you were kind enough to already pick up a copy. I think you've showed it. Go to Amazon. Go to your bookseller and buy a copy of Relentless Solution Focus. If you want to go to the website, certainly we try to give nice videos away, and we got a newsletter once a week that comes out where I just try to real quick give you one piece of quick information of what highly successful people do to work on their mental toughness. But the main thing is right now, our world needs this relentless solution focus. I'd ask you, buy a copy of the book, read one chapter, figure out one takeaway, and then teach that one takeaway to somebody you care about. Start with that, and that's a heck of a good place to start when it comes to what I can do to help or push people in the right direction.
Wonderful. Well, Jason, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for being on the show today. And I hope that we have a ton of RSF ambassadors out there.
Right on. Thanks for having me, Lisa. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.